All right, let's start. So last week we did Reb Chaim Volozhiner, who obviously matters very much, and this week we'll do, sort of continuing in history, we'll do Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, who had a connection to Volozhiner, even though he's completely different. Okay, let's start at the beginning. He's an extremely complicated person. He's an extremely complicated person, mostly because he's two different people. Okay, on the one hand, the founder of the Musar movement obviously is a saintly person who lives by himself, who doesn't interact with others, who controls his Yetzirah. All these things have to be true about the founder of the Musar movement, and they are true about Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. On the other hand, he was a worldly person. He was at times accused of being too liberal, which is not something we associate with a movement like the Musar movement. Because everybody knows, if you're open-minded, you're liberal, so you're not frum. But he was as frum as anybody, okay? So he was accused of that. He was ahead of his time. He believed in translating Gemara into German, which was not a thing that was acceptable at the time. He made dictionaries, like Aramaic German dictionaries, to help people learn Gemara. He was unsuccessful in all those things in his lifetime. He was proven successful in all those things much later in history. Okay, now, let's place it in history. The Gaon dies 13 years before Rabbi Yisrael Salanter is born. Reb Chaim Volozhiner founds the Volozhiner Yeshiva 9 years before he's born. Okay, he's born into a world of Haskalah. He's born in which the opponent of Orthodox Judaism is the Haskalah movement, the whole idea of culture and Jewish identity, but not Talmud Torah. Okay? His father was the Rav of the small Lithuanian town in which he was born. It's called Zagori, if people follow these things. Rav Yisrael Salanter was gifted. There's no question about it. Like most people who start movements, you get more latitude if you're an enormous Talmud Chacham. He was an enormous Talmud Chacham. His father, basically, he outgrew his father's learning when he was a little kid. And his father sent him to a town called Salant to learn with somebody named Rav Tzvi Hirsch Brody, who was an enormous Talmud Chacham, who was going to be his Rebbe. Then something happens that's really unique in the history of Judaism. Okay, Rav Saul's there to learn with Rav Tzvi Hirsch Brody, but he keeps noticing somebody else. The person's name is Rav Yosef Zundel of Salant. And he becomes attracted to this person. He sees how he behaves. He sees how he interacts with people. Like, as an example, he would leave the Beis Medrash every day at a certain time. This is Rav Yosef Zundel of Salant. So one day, it's almost creepy, Rav Yisrael Salanter follows him. And he sees that he's waiting at the bottom of a hill. And he waits a few minutes, and then some peddler comes with a cart. And he helps him push his cart to the top of the hill. And he goes back to the Beis Medrash. And so he becomes obsessed with this person, and he follows him around. And he follows him into the woods, where he sees him, chanting, sort of ethical statements over and over again. And the story is, one day, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter is, hiding in the bushes, literally, and he makes some noise, or he breaks a branch or something. And Rabbi Yosef Zundel sees who it is and understands what's going on, and without hesitation says to him, Yisrael, study Musar, it will give you Yiras Shamayim. Okay, that's the story. And it changes his life. He becomes a Talmud of Rav Yosef Zundel of Salant. They spend 16 years together. During all of that time, they write nothing, they produce nothing, we know no stories, we know nothing. Because, we'll come back to this in a minute, being a Baal Musar, and Rav Yosef Zundel was a Nistar. If there was such a thing as a Nistar, he was a Nistar. He went out of his way to hide who he was. He was not a Rebbe. He dressed like a regular balabas. He did, he did manual labor. He just spent all his time working on his own midos. And he turned himself into some great person who nobody knows about, except Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. Okay, so they spend 16 years together. During that time, Rav Yisrael, at the age of 13, gets married. Okay, again, we've seen before, it's not that unusual at the time. There is an interesting story where you get the sense that Reb Saul holds his whole family were saintly. His father made a shidduch with some girl for which he was going to get paid, you know, the family would have gotten paid, you know, 300 rupees or whatever it is that the currency was. Okay, the family fell upon a hard time. This is the girl's family before they were married, and they went to the Salanters. They weren't actually the Salanters, they were the Lipkins, and they said, you know, you could back out. We don't have the money. Some rich family heard this and offered them 10,000 of whatever that same currency is for their son to marry their daughter. And they said no. You know, we made a deal with these people. We're going to stick with it. Okay, that's an enormous story. Now, in 1838, Rav Zundel makes Aliyah to Yerushalayim. Okay, I assume Rav Yisrael knew this was going to happen, but he makes Aliyah to Yerushalayim, and now Rav Yisrael Salanter is faced with a life decision. He could continue to be a private, you know, saint and to live his life that way, or he could go public and he could make a difference in the world. Now, publicity is the antithesis of Mussar, right? It just is. On the other hand, Lithuanian Jewry, as he sees it at the time, is really vulnerable to Haskala. Okay, his decision is to change Mussar from being a refined level of Jewish living to being a tool for Jewish survival. Okay, it's not just that there are occasional Jews who become saintly people. He's going to change it into a movement. He's going to change it into a way for people to defend their frumkeit against challenges from the outside.
Who made Aliyah?
Rav Zundel. Not Rav Yisrael Salanter. The person he met, who was a Nistar, who was a huge influence on him, he made Aliyah. Okay? Rav Yisrael moves to Vilna, where he becomes the Rosh Yeshiva of the yeshiva there. Again, he's a huge Talmud Chacham, and he gives fantastic shiurim, so he becomes the Rosh Yeshiva. But again, he didn't see great shiurim as being successful in protecting Jews from what was undermining Judaism at the time. So he, in addition to his shiurim, he began to give talks on Yiras Shamayim. And he gave talks on Yiras Shamayim to lay people, not just lay people, he gave talks on Yiras Shamayim to women. Something that was unheard of at the time. Rabbi Yisrael felt as follows. Women may be peturas from Talmud Torah, but they're not peturas from self-improvement, not peturas from Avodas Hashem, they're not peturas from all the things that make Judaism great and that people should follow. He thought there were poor people who on a technical halachic level, again, could be peturim from Talmud Torah because the kovet, of Parnas and things like that, there is some excuse for them. He said, but there's no excuse for not becoming a better Jew. There's no excuse for not doing Avodas Hashem. So that's where his emphasis was. He opened what were called Mussar cloises. They're Mussar base medrashes, I suppose. What's different than a regular base medrash? Regular base medrash people learn in. A Mussar base medrash people yell in. People, you know, over and over again, there'll be people sitting there going, Hakina v'ataiva v'akavod motzina sa'adam min ha'olam. Hakina v'ataiva for half an hour, for 45 minutes. You can't do that in the regular base medrash. He thought if you set aside a place to focus on self-improvement, if you set aside a place to focus on personal growth, it's a better way to do it. Okay, now, Rabbi Yisrael, it turns out, was not just a Talmud Chacham. He knew about the subconscious before Freud. We have this in his writings. He knew, you know, he understood there was a thing called, in Mussar, called negios. We would say negiot, right? Means, why do you do such a thing? Because your subconscious tells you X, Y, and Z. And you're unaware of it because it's your subconscious. He thought you have to change your subconscious to become the person you're supposed to be. Okay, now, how do you change a person's subconscious? The answer is, by learning ethical statements over and over and over again. Limud ha-mussar bihispalus, meaning you'll say a pasuk over and over again. Eventually it will start to affect you. Eventually you'll think to yourself, you know, just like my example, akina v'atayu v'akavad. Well, why do I have kina? Right? Why am I jealous of people? And that kind of self-introspection, if done seriously, and done for an extended period of time changes you. Okay, but it has to be done in a special place. It has to be done in a musr klois. Now, all this is great, but let's ask ourselves, what does musr mean? Right? Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was not the first person to learn musr in the world, right? For sure not. Rabbeinu Yonah was a Rishon. Not my favorite Rishon, but he was a Rishon. Rabbeinu Yonah wrote Shaarei Tshuva, 300 years before Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was born. So what does it mean that he's the founder of a movement that it's not the Ramchal wrote Mesillas Yesharim 150 years before. He didn't make up Musar. So first of all, what is Musar? It comes from the Pasuk of Shema Bini Musar Avicha V'al Titosh Torat Imecha. You would translate as suppose as, moral conduct, moral instruction, self-discipline. Okay, we'll do it this way. We all know what Beinam LaMakom is. Okay? And we all know what Bein Adam LaChaveru is. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter made up what? Bein Adam LaAtzmo. Okay? Which he really saw as the bridge between Bein Adam LaChaveru and Bein Adam LaMakom. Okay? It's a focus on a person's subconscious. It's a focus on a person's essence. Right? Lihidamos Bedarche Hashem. How are you domat HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Mahu rachu mafato rachu mahu 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 mahu. Well, you have to be something in order to compare yourself to or in order to copy HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The word he used to describe what we're trying to achieve is shlemus or shlemut. I assume he said shlemus. Makes sense, okay? To reach that level, you're a shalem. We'll do it this way. If I ask you what you do, all right, what does a person do in this situation? So the answer is you look in halacha, okay? If I ask you how to think, the answer is you look in machshava. If I ask you how to be, like who you are, that's musar, okay? I'll just as an aside, it doesn't pay, you shouldn't join. But every morning at 6:45, I learn musar with a bunch of Shanabat guys, right? We learn Chovas HaTalmidim. I could tell you that every day I feel more religious after we learn, even if I can't tell you what we learned. There's something magical about it that has an effect on you. Okay, what's a Musar text? Lo tikom v'lo titar v'ahavta l'recha kamocha. That's a Musar text. Ma desani alach l'chavercha lo savi. That's a Musar text. What are, official Musar texts? Pirkei Avos is the earliest one, right? I mentioned Shaarei Tshuva, Rabbeinu Yonah, Orchos Tzadikim, Chovas Halavavos, Tomer Dvora, Mesillas Yesharim, which is the most famous Musar text ever written, okay? What's the general message? The general message is the opposite of the Sefer HaChinuch, my favorite Rishon, right? What's the philosophy of the Sefer HaChinuch? Anybody know? If you do it enough times, you'll become that person. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter disagrees, okay? As does the Piazetzner and Chovas Halavavos. They disagree. What do they think? They think the opposite. They think the focus has to be on your motivation. The focus has to be on the person you want to be. If your motivations are pure, it's a great thing to do. But if not, it's not, okay? The ultimate goal of Musar is to eliminate Bechira Chafshis. So that sounds crazy, right? No. If you get rid of all the negative things, you'll do mitzvahs because you want to do mitzvahs, because it's natural for you to do mitzvahs. Not because you thought about it, not because you decided it's a better thing. To be an Adam HaShalem, you have to be one with your Avodas Hashem. To be one with your Avodas Hashem, you have to discount and get rid of all of the negative parts, and just do it because it's what you want to be, because it's who you are. Okay, that's a huge chiddush. Again, I would tell you, if you want to be that, right, how do you become a person who goes to Minyan three times a day? So if you ask Eli Weber, who doesn't really count, he would tell you, well, go to Minyan three times a day, and then you'll be the kind of person who goes to Minyan three times a day. I'm not saying Rabbi Yisrael Salanter would disagree with that, but he would agree with the people who say, I want to be the kind of person who goes to Minyan three times a day. How do I get to be that kind of person? So again, I'd say, well, just do it and you'll be it. But he's like, no, you have to work on yourself, you have to work on your subconscious, you have to think about it over and over again. Okay, then you'll be it. A musar room, a musar clothes, as I mentioned before, is a place that was loud. It's a place where people do crazy things. You know, there are musar clothes where people like bang their heads against the wall. I wouldn't suggest doing that. I don't think it helps you at all, unless your goal is to get a concussion, which can be more readily achieved through bubble soccer. But, okay. That was okay? Okay, fine. I'm sorry. All right. You should not make jokes during Musar talks. Okay, fine. I apologize. Musar was reactionary. But reactionary, it's normally used in a negative sense, but it's not used this way in a negative sense. It means it was literally a reaction to Haskalah. Right? It really was. But that's what he needed. You know, the Haskalah in English is the Enlightenment. What does the Enlightenment want? It wants us to integrate more into general society. It wants us to celebrate Jewish culture, but not halacha, not the things that we value most. And that's what Musar was meant to stop. Okay, two Rabbi Yisrael Salanter stories, even though this is not supposed to be story time, but it's hard to do Musar without stories, and they're really very beautiful stories. Okay, the first is, he lived in Vilna. He was crossed. There's a river between Vilna and the adjacent town that's called Zaricha. Okay? And he gave shir in Zaricha, and he had to cross the river. And he saw a woman one day who was, I guess, about to jump in the river and commit suicide. So the first thing is, he actually literally tackled her. Right? And Rabbi Yisrael said, that's what the Gemara says, you're a chassid shoteh, if because of the isra of Negiah, you know, you're going to avoid saving a person's life. He didn't want to be a chassid shoteh. Okay, now he sits with her. They're on the banks of the river. And she tells him, this is a really sad story. She had two sons who died. Her husband is now depressed. They had like a little bit of money because they would rent out their horse and buggy. The horse died in the morning. She has nothing to live for. She wants to kill herself. And now he speaks to her for a long time to try to calm her down, to explain to her that her husband could come back again. She could have more children. Life could be well. Okay, he talks to her. But in the end, what makes him who he is he says, I'm going to get you money to buy a new horse. You promise me you won't kill yourself. I promise you I'll raise the money for a new horse, which he does. And of course, you know, the happy ending is next year he's invited to a bris. But it's not that it's going to work for you every time. It's that if you're Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, it's not just you talk to the woman and you calm her down. You actually go out and raise money so that she could buy a new horse. Second, in Rabbi Yisrael Salanter's time, and he agreed with it, only one person said Kaddish at a time, right? So now, there are obviously many conflicts because more than one person often have yahrzeit on the same day. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter paskin that the person who has yahrzeit for his father comes first. Okay? That's how he paskin. On the day of his father's yahrzeit, he comes to shul and he meets a man who's really disappointed because it's his daughter's yahrzeit. And he's not going to get to say Kaddish for his daughter because he paskin only one person can say Kaddish. And Rabbi Yisrael Salanter lets that person say Kaddish. So the people who know him are outraged. It's against his psak. It's not who he's supposed to be. It's not what he's supposed to do. And Yisrael Salanter says to them, the zchus of gemilus chasadim for what I did is greater than the zchus of the Kaddish that I would say for my father. I knew this story when my father passed away, like not to compare me at all. But, like, I thought to myself, I'm never going to fight for the Amud. Because it's better to let somebody else daven, and it'll be a better zchus for my father than the Amens that would get. Okay? So the Chiddush here is not just that he held that way, and not it's that he let his father's memory, or his father's zchus, so he obviously respected his father, be outweighed by his desire to do Gemilas Chasadim. Okay? Good. Next. In 1848, there's a cholera epidemic. And it's in Vilna, it's all over Europe, but it's an enormous thing. And it's very, very dangerous, and a lot of people died. So the first thing is, it's well known, and this is a fact, that Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was one of the leaders in terms of being matir things. Chilul Shabbos, right, for Pikuach, those things are easy, right? He supported people eating on Yom Kippur, because it was clearly dangerous to fast for the epidemic. And it's a fight whether this is really true or not, whether he actually made Kiddush in Shul on Yom Kippur. He certainly shortened the services and had people take walks out in the sun on Yom Kippur. This showed up a lot in, what's the thing we had? I'm blanking on COVID. Okay, a lot of people quoted these tshuvas from Yisrael Salanter in tshuvas in Rav Asher's tshuvas. It came up a lot that he was matir things because of pikuach nefesh. That's easy. What's weird about it is that, okay, there was some opposition to his heterim, but that happens. But the maskilim saw him as a potential ally. This shows the stupidity of Haskala, but it also shows how people think. If Rav Yisrael Salanter is a big makil, he would probably be the kind of person we would want to run our yeshiva. He's obviously not. He's the firmest guy in the world. He thought that was the halacha. But nevertheless, you know, if you're open-minded and you care deeply about Beinon Lachavero, you're suspect. So it's funny, because you're suspect on our side that firm people don't like you, maybe. And you're suspect on the other side that the left-wingers think they can make a peace with you and can, you know, they can co-opt you. So he is offered by the Tsar, okay, Tsar Nicholas, who had like these cantonist laws and used to take people to the army and forcibly convert them. He was a bad guy, okay? But the Tsar who wanted to sort of take over Judaism, he's the same Tsar who closed down Volozhin, right? So he had this idea. He's going to open a yeshiva. It's hard to know what the yeshiva would teach, but he's going to open the yeshiva. And he's going to offer the job of being Rosh Yeshiva to Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. So it's not just that Rabbi Yisrael Salanter is humiliated by the offer and people think poorly of him, so he runs away. Okay? He leaves Vilna and he goes to some small town. It's called Kovna. It's not such a small town. Where he basically establishes the first Musar Beis Medrash, the first Musar close. Okay? He makes a yeshiva that's founded on Musar. Now, the Chafetz Chaim is much younger than Rav Yisrael Salanter, but he was very much influenced by him. We'll do the Chafetz Chaim in a few weeks. Many people claim, I can't find any support for one or the other, that there was Rav Yisrael Salanter who got the Chafetz Chaim to write a sefer on Lashon Hara, right? Shemir HaSalash and things like that, that was his influence. Okay, now, the Chafetz Chaim publishes a sefer on Shemir HaSalashon, and he brings it to Rabbi Yisrael Salanter for a haskama. And Yisrael Salanter reads the sefer and he loves it, and it's fantastic. But he disagrees on one point. And it becomes a point of contention, and you know, it's kind of a famous point. The Chafetz Chaim paskins that if you, in order to do tshuva from having spoken Lashon Hara about a person, so let's say I spoke Lashon Hara about Reuven, okay? So the Chafetz Chaim says, if you want to get kapara, you have to go to Reuven and tell him what you did. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter says, no, that's a selfish act. Because Reuven is fine now. He doesn't know that I spoke Lashon Hara about him. I should go to him, insult him, make him feel bad, and then beg for his forgiveness? He said that's selfish. So again, for the Chafetz Chaim, it's halacha. What are you going to do? But for Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, it's not halacha. It can't be halacha. Because halacha has to be sensitive and halacha has to care. And there's no way it could be the halacha that I have to insult a person in order to get kapara. Okay? As he said, we have no right to do tshuva at somebody else's expense. Fine. As I said before, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter undertook a lot of projects, all of which were ahead of its time. So again, his translation of Gemara, which he never finished, did not become accepted till, yeah.
Is there an alternative way to do
tshuva? Not that I know. I think it's binary. I think either you tell, oh, yeah, I mean.
According to Rabbi Yisrael.
For sure. But it doesn't involve, according to Chafetz Chaim, you know, you have to tell the person. According to Rabbi Yisrael, you can't tell the person.
Would it be better than Malcolm
at that point?
Huh? Would it be better than Malcolm at that point?
It's interesting, right? Would you turn it into, like, you can't because you did it to the person. But I think Rabbi Yisrael would say that the halacha would agree with me. That if you genuinely feel bad and you'll never do it again and you apologize to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in place of this person, because otherwise you'll hurt his feelings, you know, I don't know how we pass in halacha l'maisa. I can tell you this, it would be hard, I think, to go over to a guy and say, I did this, I said this, please forgive me. Like, it feels wrong. I understand the Chavis Chaim side, but I'm saying on my side, or on Reb Saul Salanter's side, it would just be very, very difficult, I think. Okay, so the dictionary, the Gemara translation, Reb Yisrael Salanter was in favor of teaching Gemara to Goyim. Why? Because if they respect Gemara, if they respect HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then Jews would also, okay? He was big on outreach. Again, he's big on inreach, but he's also big on outreach. All these things were ahead of his time, okay? They were not accepted during his lifetime. Again, later on, all these things became, you know, they just became standard halacha, standard ways of behaving. But for him, it wasn't. Okay. The continuation of, you know, to start a movement, it has to not just be the case that you have a great idea. It has to be the case that you make Talmidim. It has to be the case that you have people who will actively work hard to continue your movement. So Rav Yisrael Salanter invested in his Talmidim, and they continued his movement. Okay? Most people think that the movement can be seen in its continuation in two great Musar yeshivos, in Slabodka and in Novardik. Okay? Except they were complete opposites. This is the greatness of Musar. Okay? In Slabodka, their position was, man is so great, how could he sin? How could he, you know, Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us all these gifts and made us as great as we are, how could he possibly object to, you know, how could we possibly disobey HaKadosh Baruch Hu? In Nevardik, it was the opposite. In Nevardik, their feeling was, we're so small, we're so little, we're so nothing, how could we possibly disobey HaKadosh Baruch Hu? It's funny, but it's a great story. There's a story that in Nevardik, you know, I don't know, on Yom Kippur, you'll fill in the blanks, you know, the rabbi gets up in shul, and he says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, I'm nothing, I'm nobody, I apologize for anything I've done. And then the president of the shul gets up and says the same thing. Then some other guy, like, runs up to the bima and he says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm nothing, I'm nobody, you know, how could I possibly offended you? And somebody says, somebody else in shul, look who thinks he's nobody. Right? It's a funny thing, because in Nevardik, to be nobody was to be everybody. Okay? Anyway, but what's great about it is both can be authentic Musar ideas. They're complete opposites of each other, right? One is I'm great, one is I'm nobody. But they're both Musar, because they get to the end, right? Okay. What about us? We need to find an opportunity. We need to find Musar in our own lives. Okay, we've talked about this before. It's true in the yeshiva, but, you know, every day a person needs 5 minutes at a minimum to just ask himself how he's doing. Ask himself if he's growing in Avodas Hashem. Ask himself if he's growing in Avas Hashem. Ask himself if he's growing in Yiras Shamayim. Everybody needs that. Now, there's a famous story that if you ask Rav Yisrael, you know, if you have 15 minutes, what should you learn? So the answer is, if you ask Rav Yisrael Salanter, he would tell you, learn Musar, because then you realize you have more than 15 minutes. Okay? It may or may not be. When I sent this out, so I said I was doing Rav Yisrael Salanter, so Yonatan Shai, I don't know if anybody saw it, Yonatan Shai sent out this, what Rav Khan's brother wrote many years ago, Rav Aaron, that, like, knowing the stories about Rav Aaron makes him think that the stories about Rav Yisrael Salanter could actually be true. Okay? I have a story also. At Rav Aaron's Levaya, his youngest daughter spoke. And she said that one time, you know, they had to take Rav Aaron to the hospital on Shabbos. So the part of the story about Rav Aaron not accepting the Psak and having Rav Moshe Paskin for him because he was a Nogea B'davar, that I'm less interested in. She said she went in the ambulance with her father. And she said the entire way to the hospital, and he was in great pain, he said over and over to himself, the Pasuk in Tehillim, Biyadcha afkid ruchi padisa Hashem Elokim keil emes. Biyadcha afkid ruchi padisa osi Hashem keil emes. Meaning, I'm giving myself over to you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, you take care of me. If Rav Aaron Lichtenstein had time for Musar, and I assume it's not the only time he did it, so do we. All right, Yashkoch to everybody. After lunch is Halacha, and then a regular Wednesday schedule. Have a great day.